The southern chinch bug is one of the worst pests of St. Augustine grass in the southern United States. It is a kind of a fluid feeding insect that the damage when you get a big enough population causes big patches of grass to die. And of course, nobody wants that to happen, so most of the applications that are made to control this pest tend to be preventive applications without any monitoring whatsoever. As a result of very heavy reliance on insecticides for over the last 50 years, we've got the dubious distinction of having chinch bug populations develop resistance to pretty much every chemical class that's been thrown out at it. There's a lack of an integrated pest management program at use or that has ever been defined for this particular pest, and that's something that we've been trying to look at in kind of a reductionist mode to try to figure things out and make the system work better. Just in the last couple of years, we've seen resistance documented against bifenthrin or Talstar, deltamethrin or Deltagard, imidacloprid or Merit, and permethrin or Astro. And so we've got some cross resistance within this the pyrethroid chemical class, and that's still the primary class being used against the southern chinch bug. Within the state of Florida, there are multiple populations across the state that have demonstrated resistance. And if I can get the arrow to work, you can see a lot of them are documented here in the central part of the state. However, we believe that the resistance is more widespread. It just hasn't been brought to our attention. We do have populations of resistant chinch bugs up in Pensacola, practically Alabama, and way down in Key Largo. So the Keys are not exempt from this. So what do we do? Rather than just saying that we need to have an integrated pest management program for this pest, we have to focus on resistance management. And the primary goal for resistance management is to reduce the selection pressure being exerted against the key pest. And one of the foundations here is includes a lot of the premises of integrated pest management. And so I'll go through what we've been learning about some of these different tactics. When you've got a population such as this one that we collected down near the Orlando area that is extremely resistant to bifenthrin, and we have only a couple of other products like Aloft and Arena that can provide significant knockdown within a 1 week time period. Other products that we expected to work, such as Electus and primarily Electus, did not work as a knockdown product, and we also did not see any significant mortality in our control. And so with populations such as these and with some of the ordinances that are occurring across the state for water quality issues, what we are faced with is a paradigm shift of sorts, where these populations or these homeowners are being forced to consider whether or not they can even continue growing St. Augustine grass, which is the primary lawn grass in Florida, in most of Florida. Welcome to part of my yard right after I moved to the state of Florida. We had bahia grass on part of the yard, very dead chinch bug overrun, St. Augustine grass on the other half. There is a new cultivar that is resistant to, that has host plant resistance for the southern chinch bug, and that is Captiva. However, it's still in production. It's not yet quite available for purchase. Resistance management incorporates beneficials to the best of our ability. However, we don't know how to manipulate the beneficials in the system. All we can say is conserve your beneficials by reducing or spot treating, reducing your insecticide use or spot treating. However, if you were to talk to my department chair, he's convinced that spot treatments don't work because all you do is chase around dead spots in his yard. However, it is one option. One study that I did, I'll show you a little bit of data later on if I've got time, is to, if you reduce the number of applications that you use, you can knock the beneficials down at that particular time, but every lawn seems to be treated or or managed differently because of the homeowner preferences, and so you get the treated lawns being almost like islands, so that there is the opportunity for natural enemies from one yard returning to the other yard. I would love to be able to promote the use of biorational or softer products for the control of southern chinch bug. However, every time I've tried a new product, none of them work, and they're about as good as putting water on it, with some varying degrees. So we get to the use of cultural controls for southern chinch bug. This area, I think, is ripe for development, where we can look at the effect of irrigation. If you look in the literature, there are varying discrepancies in terms of what people suggest. You can flood out a lawn in a hurricane or a rainstorm, and you can knock off some of the chinch bugs from the grass. However, if you've ever done a flotation for an insecticide evaluation, you know that they can survive for at least an hour floating around. Thatch thickness is a big deal. We think that there's a lot of binding going on with the insecticides in the thatch layer. If you see this thatch, this is about six inch thatch layer of St. Augustine grass on the slide. And another thing on irrigation and water use is that a lot of times we get drought in Florida. We kind of have a rainy season and a dry season. Well, come April, May, June, there's a lot of dry grass and people's irrigation systems aren't working, or they're under watering restrictions, and drought-stressed grass looks like chinch bug-stressed grass. And so there's a lot of misidentification of damage going on. Fertilization, I think, is a very key aspect and something that we can manipulate. We did a study last year where we reared chinch bugs, we treated plots out in the field, we brought the grass back into the field, reared chinch bugs on it, and from we had eggs that hatched. We took less than 24-hour-old nymphs, put them onto the different treatments. We had 0 pound nitrogen, that was our control, 0.5 pound nitrogen, 1, 2, and 4 pounds of nitrogen. And of course, the recommendation for St. Augustine grass is about 1 pound of nitrogen per application, per 1,000 square feet. So after 3 weeks of laboratory rearing, usually you can pump out one generation of southern chinch bug in 4 to 6 weeks, we saw a significant difference in the number of adults that had developed up to this point on the 2 pound nitrogen rate. If we took the adults that were reared off of those different treatments and put them together within, still on the same treatment that they were grown up on, we saw some significant differences here. Here is the control down on the blue line on the bottom. The 0.5 pound rate, when we looked at the nitrogen level in the grass itself to make sure that our treatments were truly valid from a biological standpoint, it was not statistically different from the control. So those two are kind of hanging out at the bottom. We saw the 2 pound rate, the number of eggs being produced, was fairly consistent. We saw on the 1 pound rate that it was also increasing, but still generally very similar to the 2 pound rate. And interestingly, we saw the 4 pound rate, the adults there laying a big spike of eggs up front and then egg numbers going down. And I think that had something to do, if you've never seen the relationship between gray leaf spot and overuse of nitrogen, it was very clear that that grass declined because of disease. One of the last things in resistance management is to make sure that you're carefully selecting and properly using the insecticides that you do have available. And these are the insecticides that are currently listed for use against chinch bugs. We've got pyrethroids, carbamates, and organophosphates, some of the neonicotinoids, and then we have combination products. Doug Houseworth brought up some very good points about selection pressure and the pros and cons about using combination products that we could have a lot of fun debating. One thing that we looked at, again, in terms of bifenthrin on a susceptible chinch bug population, a couple of years ago I set up a test and one of my students helped me to evaluate it, where we were looking at the frequency of applications of bifenthrin on locations that did not have any existing outbreak of chinch bugs. They had been under professional management, they looked clean, no damage, we're starting off from quote unquote scratch. So we had an untreated control, we had a May application of bifenthrin, May and July, and then May, July, and September. Now, in Florida, most of these companies, the pest control companies, operate on a quarterly basis. And so, you know, May and July, or May, July, and September is fairly realistic for what they do, assuming they don't have an outbreaking population. And again, this is all preventive application. So here, when we did the initial applications, everything was down. The populations of southern chinchbook were fairly low. And you can see the population stayed low for just about a year. And then on our control plots and our May-only treated plots, the population spiked. However, even just with the two and the three application times, the population stayed down low. My point here is that we have guys going out there treating 6 to 12 times a year, and they're trying to prevent chinch bug damage from occurring. There aren't any chinch bugs there. And if we have susceptible populations to bifenthrin, they don't need to be treating this much. It's an insurance policy. And so we need to continue educating them that the products that they have in most places are still good, and we need to keep those products in the marketplace, or else we will lose them due to resistance. I've also got data from this study as well, that if you do these treatments, the natural enemies return again within about a year on the control plots and the May-only treated plots. The populations spike usually in July every year, and then they start going down again. Thank you very much.
We have a break.
Okay.
All right, we have another break because we had a paper cancellation. Again, if you need to go see another paper, that's fine. But again, I'd like to take this opportunity for the next 12 minutes, and since Eileen's up here, I can dump it on her, to lead a discussion about some of these questions, about, for example, the specter that was raised about these combination products. I mean, we can have a discussion about that. We can talk about any other instances of resistance issues in pests of turf grass. I've just opened that up to the floor. And we might start also by, you know, if somebody was wanting to ask Eileen a question about this chinch bug resistance system. But let's just open up the floor and have a discussion of these sorts of issues, if you'd like.
Actually, if I could spearhead this just one second. My apologies that my student couldn't make it to the meeting. She decided on Friday that it was a much better plan to complete her dissertation so she can go out and join the real world in a few more weeks. So she's completing her dissertation work. And the assay that she was going to be talking about was a comparison between the sprig dip assay and an assay using what seems to be a very conventional bioassay. It's called the BioServe bioassay trays, where, as with a Petri dish sprig dip trial, a lot of times you have one sprig of grass in a Petri dish with 10 adult chinch bugs. There's lots of room for variation in your data, where you can have lots of room for the insects to move around, not come into contact with the insecticide-treated sprig, sometimes you can even get a chinch bug escape out of the Petri dishes. And the assay trays that she's using provide much cleaner data. The variation in the survival is much better. The insects don't desiccate after 3 days, and they're perforated lids, so you don't have to worry about using or having fumigation of the insecticides being tested as well. And you can have, instead of having 10 insects all lumped together and you can't identify what's happening to each individual insect, you can actually track individuals, because you've got one insect in each cell on this tray. So if anybody would like to talk about it later, I'd be happy to.
All right, any general comments?
Yeah, thank you.
So the question that Dave Smitley had was, did we compare thatch thickness with chinch bug densities? I would love to do that. We haven't done it yet. At this point, it's anecdotal. But there's information in the literature for other chinch bug species that it's a factor.
Daryl has a question.
Daryl? I have a question. You said that the method is a factor of clover, but arena still works. Do you know why that is?
Ron Cherry and Russell Nagata down in Belglade were the ones who ran the test indicating that imidacloprid populations of chinch bugs were resistant to imidacloprid, and they're citing it as being cross-resistant. We've got some argument with their methods on how they ran the test. It was with a sprig dip bioassay. I think they only took it out to 24 hours. And with some of the work that we've been doing, trying to compare the efficacy of systemic and contact insecticides, it looks like that's just not a great method. But I've got some bias there, so.
You have some other questions. Take whomever you'd like.
Dan, would you?
I don't want to ask you a question.
Oh.
But I want to go back to Doug's comment about the multiple, the combination product. It does have bearing on your data, because your data suggested that the combo product was not more significant than the best of the two. And I think, you know, with all due respect, your arguments largely stem upon the premise that we have multiple best insects on the same site. And, you know, if every time we make a grub application, we're putting down a pyrethroid, which is in most cases not necessary. If every time we're making a compound application on polygrain, we're putting down imidacloprid, you are going to select for resistance to a whole suite of relatively sedentary pests. We're going to see resistance in bluegrass billbugs. We're going to see it in hairy chinch bugs. You know, the premise of insecticide management isn't two chemicals at the same time, but alternation of chemical classes. And so I beg to disagree with you. I think there are cases where the combo product perhaps hasn't quite, something like any bluegrass weevil or certain known billbug infestations where we're trying to take out adults that might be crawling through the grass with the pyrethroid and then follow up with the systemic if some of the exobulbing action larvae are in the stem. I can see it there, but definitely not on a broad scale for most situations where we're dealing with single pests. I mean, should we be talking about targeted applications at the right time, in my opinion.
Any other comments? Yeah, Doug, you want to rebut that?
Comment to that briefly. Our focus for the use of a WAF is not white grub. It's way too extensive, and there are many other products that are extremely effective in that narrow 6-week application window. In fact, we've got data from this year from Paul Keller and from Dave Shetler to show that as little as 0.6 fluid ounces of Aloft per acre per year during the optimum timing for grubs will give excellent control of grubs. So that is not our market that we're going after. We're going after the early season insects where you have multiple insects. Where you're going after annual bluegrass weevil, and you expect to have a grub problem, this will take care of everything.
I'd like to also point out that if you make April applications with a nicotinoid, you're exposing two generations of grubs with single application. And no one has looked for resistance to nicotinoid to white grubs, but it's an April application strategy, I think, certainly one that might encourage to that whole chemical class, particularly if we're applying sublethal amounts to the third instar that are overbearing.
That's one thing that we've got to look at next year is the second generation of billbugs, and the second and maybe in third generation control of annual bluegrass weevil.
I can't see any rationalization for an April application of white grubs other than a known infestation of annual bluegrass weevil. Possibly on the billbug.
I agree with that.
But other than that, there's absolutely no reason to apply grub. All of these products have a half life of about 100 days. Okay? So, do the math. You've lost half your active ingredient by the time your white grub is
half. I think Eileen would like to jump in here and comment, and then we can ask for more comments from the audience.
From a resistance management standpoint, there are some, in my mind at least, there are some safety issues that having a premix It reduces the need for the applicator to do the mixing. And there is rationale in resistance management literature that if you're overwhelming the nerve system of the insect, you can knock it out, whereas if you're only hitting it with one mode of action, you're not as likely to knock it down.
It does save gas.
It does save labor, yeah, labor and gas.
Another point I'd make just quickly is, you know, there's still developing work on microbial degradation. I mean, we haven't had that many studies in turf, but there are certainly suites of studies. If you're putting that active into the environment repeatedly, it seems like you're also not only setting yourself up for resistance, but at a time where we might not see effectiveness, but that might be due to the microbes eating it all in the soil. And so from a product stewardship standpoint, you could be shooting yourself in the foot.
One other thing about product stewardship, and not that I'm advocating all manufacturers increase the price of their products, but one thing that I see can be useful, although people complain about it religiously, is the price of Arena and of Aloft. And they've got on the label, the manufacturers are dictating that you can only use the product once a year at whatever use rate, the maximum use rate, and also the cost also helps in resistance management because people only use those products as the last resort.